So the next one is emptiness. No, naturalness. Naturalness. So what we do is pass the book around and read, each one reads a paragraph until it's finished. They're quite fairly short. This one's longer than usual. You want to begin, Ritu?
Naturalness. Moment after moment, everyone comes out from nothingness. This is the true joy of life. There is a big misunderstanding about the idea of naturalness. Most people who come to us believe in some freedom or naturalness, but their understanding is what we call jinin ken gedo, or heretical naturalness. Jinin ken gedo means that there is no need to be formal, just a kind of let-alone policy or sloppiness. That is naturalness for most people. But that is not the naturalness we need. It is rather difficult to explain, but naturalness is, I think, some feeling of being independent from everything, or some activity which is based on nothingness. Something which comes out of nothingness is naturalness, like a seed or plant coming out of the ground. The seed has no idea of being some particular plant, but it has its own form and is in perfect harmony with the ground, with its surroundings. As it grows, in the course of time, it expresses its nature. Nothing exists without form and color. Whatever it is, it has some form and color, and that form and color are in perfect harmony with other beings. And there is no trouble. That is what we mean by naturalness.
Great. Plants or stone, to be natural, is no problem. But for us, there is some problem, indeed a big problem. To be natural is something we must work on. When what we do just comes out of nothingness, you have quite a new feeling. For instance, when you're hungry, to take some food is naturalness. You feel natural. But when you are expecting too much, to have some food is not natural. You have no new feeling. You have no appreciation for it.
The true practice of Sasan is to sit as if drinking water when you are thirsty. There you have naturalness. It is quite natural for you to take a nap when you are very sleepy. But to take a nap just because you are lazy, as if it were the privilege of a human being to take a nap, is not naturalness. You think, my friends, all of them are napping, why shouldn't I? When everyone else is not working, why should I work so hard? When they have a lot of money, why don't I? This is not naturalness. Your mind is entangled with some other idea, someone else's idea, and you are not independent, not yourself, and not natural. Even if you sit in a cross-legged position, if your zazen is not natural, it is not true practice. You do not have to force yourself to drink water when you are thirsty. You are glad to drink water. If you have true joy in your zazen, that is true zazen. But even though you have to force yourself to practice zazen, if you feel something good in your practice, that is zazen. Actually, it is not a matter of forcing something on you or not. Even though you have some difficulty, when you want to have it, that is naturalness.
This naturalness is very difficult to explain, but if you can just sit and experience the actuality of nothingness in your practice, there is no need to explain. If it comes out of nothingness, whatever you do is natural, and that is true activity. You have the true joy of practice, the true joy of life in it. Everyone comes out from nothingness moment after moment. Moment after moment, we have true joy of life. So we say, Shin Ku Myo U, from true emptiness, the wondrous being appears. Shin is true, Ku is emptiness, Myo is wondrous, U is being. From true emptiness, wondrous being.
Without nothingness, there is no naturalness, no true being. True being comes out of nothingness, moment after moment. Nothingness is always there. From it, everything appears. But usually, forgetting all about nothingness, you have to behave as if you have something. What you do is based on some possessive idea or some concrete idea, and it's not natural. For instance, when you listen to a lecture, you should not have any idea of yourself. You shouldn't have your own idea when you listen to someone. Forget what you have in your mind and just listen to what they say. To have nothing in your mind is naturalness. Then you'll have to understand what they say. But if you have some idea to compare what they say, you have to hear everything. Your understanding will be one-sided. That is not naturalness. When you do something, you should be completely involved in it. You should devote yourself to it completely. Then you have nothing. So if there is no true emptiness in your activity, it is not natural.
Most people insist on some idea. Recently, the younger generation talks about love. Love, love, love. Their minds are full of love. And when they study Zen, if what I say does not accord with the idea they have of love, they will not accept it. They're quite stubborn, you know. You may be amazed, of course, not all, but some have a very, very hard attitude. That is not naturalness at all. Even though they talk about love and freedom or naturalness, they do not understand these things, and they cannot understand what Zen is in that way. If you want to study Zen, you should forget all your previous ideas and just practice Zazen and see what kind of experience you have in your practice. That is naturalness.
Whatever you do, this attitude is necessary. Sometimes we say new non-shin, soft or flexible mind. New is soft feeling, non is something which is not hard, shin is mind. New non-shin means a smooth, natural mind. When you have that mind, you have the joy of life. When you lose it, you lose everything. You have nothing. Although you think you have something, you have nothing. But when all you do comes out of nothingness, then you have everything. Do you understand? That is what we mean by naturalness.
I think this harks back to a very brief and wonderful period in history when love, love, love was the big subject in San Francisco. And everyone wore a flower in his or her hair. And the scent of patchouli was everywhere. And many people came to sit with Suzuki Roshi. And I remember that era very well. And the big emphasis then was on being completely natural, throwing away all the rules about how to be in the world, wearing whatever you wanted to wear instead of what your mama told you to. There was great and loud talk of freedom, and of course not very much freedom. It just created another culture with very rigid expectations, so that if you didn't show up in that guise, then you were strange and left out. So it was a very interesting time because it was so radical and affected so many people. And Suzuki Roshi's presence in San Francisco created a kind of permission for as well. Because people understood Zen to mean freedom, great freedom. Whatever we do is Buddha nature. And so I can feel his effort here to explain that Buddha nature doesn't mean anything goes, and it doesn't mean love, love, love in the sense that they were feeling it at the time. That there's a sense of responsibility in it, or not exactly responsibility, because that's not quite right, but unless we're in touch with what he calls emptiness or naturalness. Our actions are all self-driven, ego-driven. Everything that we do is to enhance ourself in some way. And so it usually we're trying too hard, and we're trying in a very self-conscious way, always looking at ourselves and judging ourselves and trying to figure out whether we're doing it right or not. And that's what he's calling unnatural. It's very uncomfortable. And it's very, very natural. We all do it that way. It's the human dichotomy that we wake up in our bodies and we look around and we say, well, here I am, and then try to figure out what that is and dress it up and check it out with everybody. But besides all of that, the origin of us, the source of us, is still our life. The source and origin before we put on our clothes and began to walk and talk and be somebody. And so he's suggesting what we know from meditation practice, that those things easily fall off. When it comes down to it, all of those things easily fall off. Our self-consciousness, our very self-aggrandizement, our way of polishing ourselves up in our own view of ourselves. Once we sit down and feel safe and quiet, and there's nothing to show off for, there's a freedom in meditation that is completely natural. There's no way not to do zazen right. But even in zazen, we try. You know, I keep adjusting posture. I keep coming back. Of course, there's effort. And he's talking about effort here also. It's important to make the right kind of effort. But if we try too hard and try in order to make ourselves a better person, in everyone's eyes, or our own eyes for that matter, then we fall into the place of berating ourselves for not doing it right, or feeling really badly, or all the things that follow after that mistake. So having the chance to sit zazen over and over brings us back to the total simplicity of the moment of our being as it is right here, right now, wherever that is. Buddha talks about right effort. He says it's like a stringed instrument that if you need to tighten it. If the strings are too loose, it doesn't make any music at all. If you tighten it too tight, it breaks. So both ways, it takes real careful attention to find exactly the right tightness, you could say, the right effort. And it's not the same every time, of course, because we're not the same every time. One day we wake up and everything is going very well, and we can sit and it feels like we had a good sitting. But there's no such thing, really. It's just sitting. And some days when we feel really upset or unhappy, and our sitting is kind of up and down and up and down, waves, we could say it's a bad sitting, but it's not a bad sitting. There's no such thing. We sit with what is. we be what is, and allow that to be enough. It's hard to do. It's hard not to want to polish ourselves up and be more special, not make so many mistakes. But oh dear, we just do. Mistake after mistake. So I think this has a sort of a flavor of flower children and hate Ashbury and all the wild doings that went on in San Francisco in that time when everything broke open in our society and has never been the same since. For good or ill, there's no way to measure that either. It just happened. Causes and conditions came together. Nothingness is a strange word. It's like the word emptiness. It doesn't really mean nothing any more than emptiness really means empty. They're both very misleading. And yet, when anybody tries to find another word for them, nobody has. Not yet. It's not that there's nothing, it's just that there's no one particular isolated thing. Nothing exists in isolation. You, me, the rug, the house, the traffic, the trees, the sky, the farthest galaxy. We see each thing as separate, and we can name them all. But emptiness is the sense of how it's all of a piece. It's just different names for one thing. So are there questions? Discussion? Donna Lynn?
After mentioning the two taking the precepts, it made me feel that the naturalness is like the original intent of the precepts too. Who we are naturally, that it's the natural way of living for us.
Yes, right? Yes.
I sense it. It's,
yes, I know what you mean.
So that does.
Precepts is an idea, and he's talking about the ideas that we carry around about ourselves and everything else. And he's saying drop the ideas. Precepts can be experienced as ideas about how we should behave. You know, be good, do not kill, do not steal, do not lie. But the understanding in our practice is that we are the precepts, that they come out of our own life, that they're our original nature, and when we meet them, we recognize them. Oh yes, of course, this is how I've always felt. This is what I mean to do. This is what my intention is. So it is that. It's the naturalness that arises out of our own life and mind.
To a moment and not fixed.
Yes.
My idea, when I first read about the precepts years ago, it's very fixed.
Mm-hmm. but it can't be fixed because life isn't fixed. And he says, soft and flexible, doesn't he? Soft and flexible mind. So it means just being quietly present and honestly present with whatever arises. And that itself is, you know, we meet ourselves in every situation.
You know, possibly as the chapter made me think of leaving no trace. Sense it was just another way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back in the past, leaving no trace of yourself, so having a bigger idea than what it really is.
Yeah. The bird leaves no trace across the sky. Yeah. And there's no end to the sky for the bird. That's us too. Thank you. Julian?
Is Prajnaparamita and emptiness, are they interchangeable kind of words? Are they pointing to the same thing? Like,
mm-hmm. Prajna means wisdom, and paramita is the action of say crossing over to the other shore, and that's a kind of very awkward way of talking about how we rely on our own basic, deep, natural source of wisdom. So when the bodhisattva depends on prajna paramita, and mind is no hindrance, so it's the mind, the natural mind of us, before we get so caught up with ourself and our image and our agenda. And it doesn't say we get rid of our mind. It just says it's no longer any hindrance. If we drop down into our true nature, then our mind keeps spinning. It doesn't stop. It keeps churning out all kinds of reactions to what we experience. And it's a kind of richness of our life as well. But without depending on where we came from, you could say, from our basis, then we get driven by all these thoughts without having any sense of who we are or where we're going.
What's that list? You know, like no form,
feelings, perceptions, impulses, consciousness.
Any of those things.
Those are all the layers of ourself. The form is just the body. The feeling is how we perceive what comes. Perceptions create feelings. Feelings, perceptions, impulses is what we're driven to do when we perceive. And consciousness is how we begin to think about things. Before the actual thoughts come, the consciousness is boiling because this body is an intake valve, you could say, that's reacting to the world. And then, of course, we become an exhalation of all of those things as well. So what the sutra is saying is that all of those things are impermanent and fragile, and if we're caught by it and believe that it's solid and fixed forever, that we begin to suffer greatly because they're empty, meaning they're just coming and going, flowing, continually flowing.
Okay, so I got Guitar Hero, okay, and trying to, you know, it seems very simple, the buttons and stuff. Now, it seemed like whenever I was pressing one button, this one finger would go up, and it was just, it's like I couldn't control it.
Mm-hmm.
Is dealing, I mean, on different kinds of levels, obviously, is that this kind of mystery of like, geez, why? It's like I had no, yeah. I mean, obviously it's from my hand, right? But like there was no sync or...
Yeah.
Flowing from what, you know.
It's like your breath. One of the reasons that we focus on the breath is because we can control the breath. You can make it fast or slow any way you want it to go. But if you hold your breath and say, I'm going to dominate the breath, I will never breathe again, and you hold it, you pass out, and your body begins to breathe all by itself. So, we think we have a lot more control than we really do. In fact, they're discovering more and more how less and less control we actually have. That we, when you decide to lift your arm, they can measure your brain waves, and they have already recorded you lifting the arm before you've lifted your arm. So it happens instantaneously, but it's first happening before you think about it. So our thinking is very secondary.
How does one ever learn?
Well, yeah. Dan?
Given the section that we read tonight and the Heart Sutra, can one conclude that the practice says that fear of the world alone, to the exclusion of seeing possibility in the world, if one just has fear of the world as one's outlook, that that's not the whole story? Because it's not natural to say it can only be one thing, because we know it can also be a good thing. So, not knowing, because it's for the future, if one has a reaction of, yeah, I'm not going to take action because I don't know how the world's going to react, or it might slap me back, as opposed to reward me for whatever happened, that one-sidedness is unnatural in the sense of the chapter, and it's not a prajna paramita view, a belief in the emptiness and nothingness you spoke of, that exists inherently in that failure to see the oneness of what's out there. And oneself is, therefore, one can conclude that fear, to the exclusion of seeing the positive, is not natural.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Reasonable interpretation of the...
Yes, because it's thinking again. It's creating ideas about how things are supposed to be or going to be. And all of our fears, are almost all of them, are based on projection into the future of what might happen. Some people are so afraid that they don't even leave their house. There are several people I've heard in Santa Cruz County now who have been in their house for the last 6 weeks because they're afraid of the apple moth spraying. And you know, we do that. Our minds begin to clutch at our idea of ourself, and we begin to revise our life in such an artificial way that it becomes very, very difficult and painful. The natural way is so simple, it's kind of boring, I often say, and think. It's not nearly as dramatic and exciting as the life of projections. It's just quiet, natural, like plants growing in a garden. You know, and every now and then, a beautiful flower comes. You know, and I think that's true in our lives too. Every now and then, something blooms. But mostly, it's just this kind of simple and modest and humble life of service. How we serve each other, how we're able to serve each other amidst the many mistakes that we make. Yeah. It's a very fortunate life. Well, it's 8 o'clock.